plant-based eating is growing in popularity. Is it for you? The term vegan dates back to 1944, when a British woodworking teacher named Donald Watson, a member of the Leicester Vegetarian Society, called a meeting and then started a small newsletter called The Vegan News. What was once a fringe movement has moved into the mainstream, big time, with celebrities including Miley Cyrus, Ellen DeGeneres, and Bill Clinton espousing a vegan lifestyle. It's a lot easier to follow a vegan, vegetarian, or plant-based diet than it used to be. More restaurants and grocery stores offer a variety of foods, and you can find a limitless number of recipes on the internet. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn more about plant-based eating, including tips on how to transition to more meatless meals. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. More people are turning to plant-based eating these days for their health or for philosophical reasons. Choosing a vegan or plant-based lifestyle used to be unusual, but nowadays, many restaurants offer vegan options on the menu. We'll learn more about plant-based living from our guest today. Joining me in our studio, Avery Yale. Is it Camilla?
Camilla.
She's with the Portland Press Herald, and she writes a vegan kitchen column. Sarah Scovrin is a registered dietitian and nutritionist with a focus on vegan diets, and she is based in the Midcoast area. And Chris Bassett is a chef and baker at Slab Sicilian Street Food Restaurant in Portland, and he was the 2015 Maine Restaurant Association Chef of the Year. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you tried introducing more plant-based meatless meals to your family's diet? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start by asking each of you about your own personal journeys a little bit. And Chris, I'll start with you. When did you change the way you ate? Have you always been a vegetarian?
I haven't always been a vegetarian. I've always been an animal lover, though. And I realized when I was really young that something was wrong with, at least in my heart, of what we do to animals for food. And it was like the mid-90s. I learned, it was after culinary school, there was a big movement in the mid-90s, fine dining focused on vegetables. And it kind of sparked my interest and learned, you know, we don't have to eat animals to survive, so...
So when you were in culinary school, this was not part of the curriculum, how to cook for people who wanted to avoid meat.
There was definitely part of the curriculum, it's the fine dining end of it. And once you get into the pubs and stuff, they didn't really care as much.
Okay, okay. So, and how old were you when you started to make the shift personally?
Mid-20s, 24, 25.
Okay, okay. What about you, Sarah? Do you have a story to tell?
Not really. I've only been vegan-ish for about 5 years, and it started off being more for environmental reasons, but the longer I've been, you know, part of this community, the more the animal piece has become important.
Mm-hmm. And from the reading I'm doing, that seems to be, I wouldn't say a typical story, but a lot of people starting for health reasons, but then thinking about other reasons as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Avery, what about you? You grew up on an organic farm, right? What kind of farm?
It was a small farm. We had vegetables and animals. So I, kind of saw the intimate side of what happens to animals. I, you know, with my parents raised pigs, and I played with those pigs, and then they showed up on the dinner table. I really didn't start connecting the dots and how I felt about that until I was in high school and had to give a sophomore speech off a list that the English teacher had. I picked animal rights. I didn't know what that was. And then when I delved into that, I found all this stuff about vegetarianism. And I became a vegetarian. That was 30 years ago. When I went off to college, I was then introduced to a book called Diet for a New America by John Robbins. And that's when it opened my eyes to the dairy industry and the egg industry, which I should have had my eyes open to anyways. My grandfather had a dairy farm here in Maine. And so, you know, I saw the calves taken from the mothers when they were hours old, and they would cry, and the mother would, you know, moan and wail for a long time afterwards. So I had seen all of that. But once I kind of put it all together, I was like, wow, okay. And I was away at college at a very, you know, accommodating university, and you know, the dining hall was great, had vegan stuff, even though this was
a long time ago. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's all come a long way, that, you know, from what was available then, but that was my journey.
Okay, so Sarah, tell me, what is the difference for those of these terms that get thrown around? What is a vegan? What's a vegetarian? And what is a plant-based diet? And I understand that the third is a little more controversial.
Right. So a vegetarian is someone who does not eat animal flesh. So whether you're talking about a mammal or fish or poultry, a vegetarian wouldn't eat any of that. A vegan, if you're talking about the diet part of it, that's someone who, in addition to being vegetarian, also does not eat dairy or eggs or honey or anything processed with any animal byproducts. And then the vegan lifestyle part of it, most people who use the word vegan also don't use leather. They worry about the ingredients of glues in shoes. They're not going to wear silk. So the vegan lifestyle part is a lot broader. When you start talking about plant-based diets, it gets a little more complicated. A lot of people use that to refer to the vegan diet part of the vegan lifestyle. But some people now are using it to refer to the fact that they're eating mostly plant-based foods with maybe a tiny little bit of animal food. So someone's using the term plant-based, you don't know quite exactly what they mean until you get a little more into it.
I mean, it probably is generally understood that plant-based means not having roast chicken one night and steak the
exactly.
next night. But perhaps having some sort of stir fry that has a little bit of something but is mainly nuts and vegetables. That's what some people meant
that, exactly.
define it as.
Yes.
Yeah. So whereas others would define that as not plant-based eating.
Exactly. Exactly.
Got you. Okay. So now that we've got these definitions out of the way, one of the really big things I want to tackle today is, so, you know, our listeners are smart. They know about this kind of different ways of eating. But sometimes people find it really hard to make a shift in your own life. People are, as you know, if you're a nutritionist, you know, it's really hard to make a change. So I'll start with you, Chris. If someone is thinking, well, maybe I could add a meal or two, a dinner or two a week to my family's meal plan, what would you suggest they start with? What is sort of an easy and nutritious and something the kids might eat way to start?
Well, for me, when we got rid of having meat in the house, it seemed complicated. But then it dawned on me that it's not complicated. All you have to do is leave it out. The same dishes that I was creating around meat-based proteins, you could just leave the meat off the plate and eat all the side pieces. And it was a delicious meal full of healthy vegetables and starches. Say, if you have a steak with mashed potatoes and green beans, just have the mashed potatoes and green beans. It's a full meal. It really is that easy to be satisfied with the same foods that you already love.
Is it really, though, nutritionally that simple?
So as a dietitian, I have a bit of a different perspective. I do think consciously adding some protein foods is important, and increasing your consumption of vegetables to make up for those minerals in animal products that you might not be getting if you just pull the animal products out. So a little bit of increase in the vegetables you eat, and also, you know, not at every meal even necessarily. So if for dinner you just want to have your mashed potatoes and green beans, go ahead. But if you do that kind of thing for every day or every meal, you're probably going to notice that you're missing some protein and maybe some healthy fats.
All right. So I'm guessing add some almonds to your green beans, or
some nuts are tricky. Because in order to get enough protein, you sometimes need to add a lot of them, and then you're adding calorically maybe more food than you realize you're adding. I'm a no-diet dietitian, so you go ahead and eat all the calories you want, but it's something you need to be aware of. Definitely, I'm a big fan of beans, lentils, some of the grains like, well, they aren't actually grains, but we treat them like grains, like quinoa, have a high protein content.
Quinoa is technically a seed, right?
It really depends who you ask. I've seen it as a seed. I've seen it called a flour. I've seen it called a pseudograin. But you can treat it like a grain. It has a great protein content. And then, of course, your soy products, which that's part of the legume family, but it's got a great amino acid, which is the components of protein. soy has a great amino acid component.
Okay, and I want to ask both of you, I'll go to Avery. What do you suggest for someone? What's a meal to try one night or another night that's easy and most people with a traditional palate will like?
Well, I think one thing that people can do if they're just starting out is look at what they eat already. Do they eat chili? That's a super easy meal to veganize. You know, you can either just take the meat out and it's full of beans and, you know, all that nice protein. And you could even add in a meat substitute, tofu, seitan, something like that if you wanted, you know, a meaty component to it. Stir fry, another great thing. Take out the chicken, add in tofu. Veggie burgers, if you like, you know, burgers and fries, find a veggie burger you like. There are so many veggie burgers out there now. You can make them at home. You can buy them off the shelf. So I think that going with really, you know, instead of trying to, you know, find a recipe you've never tried before that's really exotic, but just sticking with the basics of how you already eat and trying to veganize that. And, you know, the exciting thing nowadays is there are so many new products out there. There's, you know, there's excellent vegan cheeses. There are all sorts of meat substitutes. There are milk substitutes. These didn't exist 30 years ago when I went vegetarian, but they're just, you know, they're more coming out every day. So, you know, it's easy to sort of eat the same way, but just substitute in a vegetarian protein instead.
Okay, Sarah, your turn. What would you suggest to someone?
Something very similar to what Avery just said. If you're looking for specific recipes, I actually have a website that I'm a big fan of. It's nomeatathlete.com. They are not chefs or bakers or professional cooks, and they just have very basic, here's how to, you know, liven up some beans and rice. Here are several different ways to make beans and rice more interesting. Here's a basic veggie burger recipe. Add in the things you like. So for me, that's a very good starting place. All the recipes are labeled, whether they're vegetarian or vegan. And I think for beginners, that's a great place to start.
Chris, at the restaurant at Slab, are there menu items that you created for vegans that are popular among all sorts of people, even people who wouldn't identify themselves as plant-based eaters?
Yeah, actually, as a chef, I've always tried to trick the non-vegetarians into eating the vegetarian dishes on a menu. In a fine dining menu setting, every dish has to sell, or it's a loser dish, so you have to take it off the menu. So a lot of times I would do a ravioli dish, something that somebody craves that isn't anywhere else on the menu, and make it vegetarian. So when somebody wants a ravioli dish, they're just eating the vegetarian one and don't really realize it, because
so
what they want is
so it might be a sweet
raviolis.
Potato or mushroom
or
ravioli.
Asparagus or,
okay.
Yeah, things like that.
Uh-huh.
At Slab, we do have half of our menu is vegetarian, and half of those items are 100% vegan, and they're very popular. And it was started by Steven Lanzalotta, the originator of Slab, at his bakery Sophia's. He had a lot of interest in vegetarian and vegan items there, so he carried that on to the original menu that opened at Slab, and it's become popular with vegans and vegetarians since then, because we had a pretty broad menu with healthy items on it.
Is there a favorite healthy item?
Well, we do have a gluten-free vegan item, the collie crust, which is made out of cauliflower, and it's bound together with flax seeds and chickpea flour. It seems to be ordered, you know, quite frequently.
Sure, because it's getting more challenging if you are trying to be not only vegan but also gluten-free, or trying to avoid some other. If you're trying to be vegan and avoid soy, it would be challenging. I bet you're working with people like that, aren't you?
Yes, and I myself have sort of a variety of food allergies, which put my conversion to becoming vegan on hold when I was originally diagnosed. I had to sort of backtrack, learn how to eat that new way first, and then make that other change.
All right. Well, Avery talked about how much things have changed. Do you find the same thing when you are in the culinary world, that the attitudes toward customers who may not eat meat has changed?
Absolutely. I hadn't seen a vegan cheese in any restaurant I'd been on until Slab, actually. We offer pizza, so you have to have some substitute for the cheese there for everyone. Even though just a simple tomato sauce and vegetables is great on a pizza, the vegan cheese does add that creamy texture that people are looking for out of a pizza.
All right. Talk about planning. How much planning do you do, Avery, for your meals for a week?
Well, before I had a child, I did no planning. But once I became a mom, I realized I had to get my act together, and you couldn't just decide at 7 o'clock at night what you're going to have for dinner. So what I do every week is I just make up a plan of what I'm going to cook for dinner, and then I make my shopping list. And I do a lot of bean-based dishes, and I cook my own beans from scratch. So that's one of the reasons I like to have a plan, because then it reminds me the day before I need to soak those beans and, you know, start cooking them. But, I mean, there's so many beans you can buy in cans, and they're excellent, and they're great choices. So I do more planning because I'm a mom than because I'm a vegan. I mean, I was a vegan for decades before I started all this planning. So I don't think it really takes any more planning than you know, eating with meat. You know, it just depends on what people's, you know, home needs are as far as, you know, getting a meal on the table for kids.
Though you have a very strong knowledge base as well. You could probably pull something out of the hat in a way that not all of us can.
Well, I mean, my meals are you know, pretty basic. I have a 5-year-old, like many 5-year-olds, he's picky. So, you know, I do a lot of deconstructed meals. You know, I was saying something to my husband, and he said, oh, I thought that this must just be a trend, you know, why we're eating like this. I'm like, no, it's because
he doesn't like
of our
his food
son.
Mixed.
Right, nothing can touch.
Sarah, you're laughing. Are there special considerations, though, if someone is pregnant or has small children when they're thinking about, you know, Avery said she started planning. Are there things you need to really pay attention to when you have a growing child in your house?
So that's a tricky question, because the real answer is not any more than a meat eater would. People, when they find out you're vegan, they suddenly become very concerned about your nutrients in a way they aren't about somebody who continues to eat meat, where the meat eater's diet may not necessarily be more nutrient dense or better for a pregnant or a lactating woman or a child. So yes, there are certain nutrients you want to make sure that you are getting when you're pregnant that are the same nutrients you have to make sure you're getting if you are a meat eater. You need to be careful with iron. You need to make sure you're getting that folate, preferably from food sources rather than supplementation. You want to make sure you're getting enough zinc and omega-3 fatty acids, particularly DHA, which is only available in animal products, so you have to really up your consumption or supplement.
All right. So, and that sounds like something you need to probably supplement throughout your life if you're going to continue to eat a primarily plant-based diet.
If you are not interested in eating the plant foods that have the plant-based ALA omega-3s that convert to DHA, then yes, you should supplement. But I will also amend that to say that most meat eaters I know are not eating enough omega-3 fatty acids either. They're really only available in that fatty fish. And I know a lot of people who will eat shellfish or white flaky fish, and that's not going to do it either.
So it's only in salmon and mackerel and things like that.
Herring, sardines.
All right. Well, yeah. Guess what? We already have to take a break. When we come back, comments and questions from you. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
Call any vegetable. Call it by name.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine, and the Edgar and Geraldine Fader Foundation, in support of the Maine Maritime Museum in Bath and its work to preserve Maine's maritime heritage.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, novelist Gillian Flynn gets a job, and it's a lot more than she bargained for.
My first thought was, my God, I think he's killed someone? Am I going to be an accessory to murder? I'm going to have to, like, this is such a bummer. I did not sign up for this.
Gillian Flynn, the author of Gone Girl, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 2 and again Sunday evening at 11.
With so many distractions and interruptions, how do we even start paying attention to our attention?
One of the problems is we don't have the ability to separate the crazy distractions from the things that are not the distractions. We're not built for this.
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about how we choose to direct our attention. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 1 and again Wednesday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, veganism and plant-based living. Joining me today, Sarah Scovrin. She's a registered dietitian and nutritionist who focuses on vegan diets. Chris Bassett is chef and baker at Slab Restaurant. He maintains a vegan diet at home. And Avery Yale Camilla is a vegan kitchen columnist with the Portland Press Herald. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, Victoria Moran. She's a best-selling author and nationally recognized speaker specializing in vegan living. She hosts the Main Street Vegan radio show and podcast. Thanks for joining us, Victoria.
Well, thanks for inviting me. What a party.
Many people are just learning about veganism, but you've been a vegan for a long time. Tell us how that came about.
You know, I wanted to be vegetarian when I was 13 years old, living in Kansas City, one of the few towns that has a steak named for it. Didn't know any vegetarians, tried for a few months, kind of failed one night when my mom was making pot roast, but it stayed with me. And when I got into yoga later in my teens, I did manage to become vegetarian, which is just not eating meat or fish. I didn't even know about veganism for several years. And when I heard about it, I loved it, but I couldn't do it, because it was just too extreme, at least to me back then. Plus, I was dealing with a binge eating disorder. And ultimately, after several years of kind of slipping and sliding and trying, I managed in 1983, having gotten a handle on my eating issues and to have choice in what I wanted to eat, I chose vegan, and it's treated me really well for low these 35 years.
Do you feel that people have misconceptions about veganism?
I think less than they used to. I think that some people see it as just some kind of diet where you don't eat some stuff. So you'll hear, well, I'm vegan, and someone will say, you should meet my sister. She's gluten-free. And so it's the idea, you don't eat some stuff, she doesn't eat some stuff, you guys will be really good friends. I think there's also the idea for some people that this is just for your health or just for animals or just for the environment, where I think most people get into veganism for one of those big reasons and sometimes some other reasons too. Sometimes people do it for religious or spiritual reasons. Other people do it just to save money. And once you're in, you kind of learn all the reasons for doing this and find that your life enriches a lot for getting into the various aspects of being vegan.
So you're going to be here in Portland, I understand, as featured speaker at VegFest. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what you'll be talking about?
Yeah, well, VegFests are amazing, and they have cropped up all over the country, and I speak at a lot of them in a lot of places, but I am more excited about speaking at the one in Portland than in a lot of places because I really love your city. I've been there a couple of times before and find it absolutely charming. So that's going to be the weekend of June 1st, and my talk this year is going to be called Assisting Isaiah. So anybody who's familiar with the Isaiah prophecy in the Bible, there's a quote about that across the street from the United Nations in New York City where I live, and whenever I'm on the First Avenue bus going uptown, and I read this beautiful prophecy about peace on earth, and not just peace among nations or among humans, but actually this idea where all the animals and everybody will be in this lovely, peaceful, actually vegan state, like the story of the Garden of Eden. Eden was vegan, interestingly enough. And so I'm going to talk about how you can create your little bit of paradise just in your own life, in your own home, by making some of these changes and eating more from the plant kingdom and living for something bigger than you.
Well, thank you so much, Victoria. Victoria Moran, a nationally recognized expert in vegan living. She is the host of the radio show and podcast, Main Street Vegan. And Avery, do you know off the top of your head what day and time she's speaking?
It's June 2nd, and I believe she is the 1 o'clock speaker. Does that sound right, Victoria?
That sounds right.
Yes,
It is the 2nd. Pardon me for saying the 1st. I'm the Sunday, one of the Sunday speakers.
Okay, terrific. And we'll put more information on our Facebook page. Thanks so much for calling in, Victoria. We'll go from her to Constantino, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Constantino. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you today?
Good.
Excellent. I just wanted to say that I completely concur with your esteemed panel about America's growing changes in perceptions about food. I make a living doing promoting that very same thing. I'm a veggie burger manufacturer here in Westbrook, Maine, and I'm doing quite well.
That's great. How long have you been selling your veggie burgers, Constantino, and what are they called?
The name brand is Blue Mango Veggie Burgers, and this is year number 9.
Wow. Congratulations. Avery, you know his burgers?
I do. I know him very well. Hi, Constantino.
Hi, Avery. How are you?
I'm doing well. He's one of four manufacturers we have in Maine doing veggie burgers, and they're all doing really well, and it's exciting. It's exciting to have that many veggie burger companies in a little state like Maine.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in, Constantino. Let's see. I think we're going to go to a Facebook post. I hope you'll talk about cheese and whether it's truly vegetarian due to the enzymes coming from animal rennet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Microbial enzymes. Explain his question, Sarah, and then tell me what the answer
is. So historically, cheese is made using an enzyme that is found in the inside of cow stomachs. It is possible to duplicate that effect without killing a cow now. So it would behoove you, if you're concerned about that, to get in touch with the particular cheese manufacturer and find out what they are using. I don't know if you, Chris, would know more about what is standard nowadays. I really don't. But if it's using some sort of artisanal manufacturing process, I'm guessing it does use the rennet from cows.
Almost all cheeses, unless it's specifically advertised as not having animal rennet in it. If it says rennet in the ingredients, it's most likely an animal rennet.
And is it difficult or easy to source a cheese without?
I would think it's difficult because I haven't seen it that often. You have to really look for it or have a small batch specialty cheesemaker do it. But whenever I'm asked the question, I analyze what cheeses I have in house, and they're almost all from animal rennet.
Okay, well, so let's change the cheese question around a little bit. You talked earlier about it used to be hard to find a good vegan cheese, but not so much anymore. Do you have favorite brands or favorite varieties?
There's new ones coming out all the time. Even the small dairy, the small creameries in Maine are offering vegan spreads and things that they're aging and culturing like regular cheese. It's not just a nut-based cheese, but they'll take soy milk and culture it like real cheese with a vegetarian culture, hopefully.
Interesting. We have a post from Seamus on Facebook. Please tell us how older people can get more protein in a plant-based diet. I understand we need to get 90 grams of protein a day. Very tough to do.
Well, that 90-gram number, you know, is maybe a good ballpark, but it very much varies on your activity level, your stage of life, and your weight and your muscle mass. Getting protein, if you're accustomed to eating animal products, it can seem daunting to get it on a vegan diet. And when you're dealing with older people whose taste buds have changed, their salivary production has changed, their appetites are usually diminished, and they have some muscle wasting, it can be a challenge no matter what the diet. So I say the first step would be beans, soy, whatever else, nuts you're eating on a regular vegan diet. And then you're going to want to look for some supplemental foods, some protein powders, and perhaps changing the texture of the other foods. Maybe giving a hummus instead of just beans in something might be a little more palatable to an older adult.
All right. And protein powder in a smoothie or something like that.
Yes. Yes. Or in a pudding, or, you know, there are some baked good recipes that call for protein powder if that's something that's appealing to an older adult. I'm not sure exactly what age we're talking about here, but when you're talking about the elderly, it can be quite a challenge to get any food at all in. And so these supplements, which I don't recommend relying on through most stages of life, sometimes with the very ill or the very old, that's where you go.
All right. An email from Michael. I became a whole food plant-based vegan 4 years ago for health reasons after a lifetime of eating lots of fatty meats and have become much healthier. I love how Avery has been helping introduce people to this lifestyle. Portland is such a food city. Why isn't there any true vegan or plant-based restaurant in Portland? I thought the Green Elephant was.
Well, they're technically vegetarian. They have egg in a few of their dishes because they're, you know, sort of Thai restaurant. And everything on their menu you can order as vegan, but it's technically a vegetarian restaurant. And, yeah, it's sort of surprising that, you know, Maine, Portland being a foodie city, doesn't have an all plant-based restaurant. I mean, it's certainly the trend around the country. We're seeing it in, you know, other major cities and smaller cities. And even with chains, there's a whole long list of growing restaurant chains that are all vegan. They're doing well. One of the closest ones to us is in Boston. It's called By Chloe. It's kind of, you know, a fast casual, fast food sort of format. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe Chris has some insights into this, and, you know, maybe someone's cooking up something. You know, I don't know.
Sure.
What are your
Chris,
thoughts?
I'm thinking up the top of my head that maybe a reason is people like to eat in groups where they're, you know, you could, a vegan can eat with their non-vegan friends. Is that?
That definitely plays part of it. And it's really money driven more than that. I mean, if we had a bigger population, maybe we would have enough of a percentage of people that would eat at a totally vegan restaurant to have it survive. But, you know, when you have people trying to make profit at the top of a business, you're trying to make maximum profit and you set aside your beliefs.
I would just add one more comment that just came to mind. There's a food truck that's all vegan in Portland, Falafel Mafia. They launched last year, and they weren't all vegan. Their falafel menu was vegan, and then they had some chicken dishes or something else. But as of this summer, when they rolled out again, it's all vegan. Everything on their menu is vegan. They're often parked on Spring Street in town, and they sometimes go to Congress Square at night. And at lunchtime, you'll see this long line of very well-dressed young people who've come from all the offices to eat vegan falafel. And, you know, so they seem to be doing well, you know, with it.
There's a second one this year, too, a totally awesome vegan food truck.
Yes, coming soon.
Yeah,
so exciting.
I just got a phone call from them yesterday looking for bread. So maybe we'll have a little slab bread
on
the truck.
Good,
terrific.
Good.
We'll go to Josh calling from Portland. Hi, Josh. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a plug for algae, or in other words, seaweed. It's not a plant, but because it's grown in the ocean, it has a lot of things that would be great for vegetarians. It's high in iodine. It has copper, iron, other minerals. And the other cool thing about seaweed is it does actually have omega-3 and 6. It's actually where fish get their omegas from. Fish actually don't produce their own omegas. And the other cool thing about seaweed is it's grown right here in Maine. We have a lot of companies that are either harvesting it or farming it, and they're making it into just flakes where you can sprinkle it on your food. Obviously, just the dried seaweed that you can use to cook with. There are crunch bars. There's kelp jerky. There's kelp smoothie cubes. So there are all these cool different things, and they're perfectly okay for vegetarians, obviously, and vegans. And I am actually going to be opening up a all seaweed shop in Portland this summer. It's called Heritage Seaweed, and I'm going to try to showcase all these really amazing Maine products.
Terrific, Josh. Where in Portland will it be? Do you know yet?
Yeah, it's going to be on India Street, so right down by the waterfront, and we're going to have all these specialty foods, as well as there are a lot of bath and body products that are being made with seaweed as well. So we're going to have that and, you know, cookbooks and other things that kind of relate.
Well, good luck to you. Sarah's been taking notes.
No, that sounds fantastic. Algae is great, and for someone who is really interested in diving right into the whole foods, plant-based aspect of veganism and wants to not supplement, it's a really great option.
All right. Thanks, Josh, for your call. We're going to go to Mark in Ellsworth. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for putting this on as a subject. But I'm concerned about a couple things. You keep using the term vegan and plant-based as if it's the same, and they really are completely different. It's whole food plant-based, where you're using the whole food. You aren't making your food from anything processed. And as far as the vegan term, I love being whole food plant-based, but when it comes to veganism, there's a lot of vegan junk food out there.
Sure. I think it's a good point you bring up. At the very top of the show, we did talk about the difference in the terms, but I do think that second point is one we haven't talked about yet, is that you can be a vegan and still eat junk. Mm-hmm. I mean, potato chips are vegan, right? French fries, lots of sweet stuff.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Right.
There's
right,
so many vegan ice creams now. It's, you know, vegan cake, vegan donuts, you know, they're
macaroni
they're all,
and cheese.
Yeah. All out there.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks for your call. We do have to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
I don't eat no meat, no dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry falafel, barbecue.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and insulation rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
New England's history is tied to the shipping industry.
Although they weren't naturally mariners, the original New Englanders turned to the one place that offered them opportunity, which was, of course, through shipping and through fishing.
But what does the future hold for Northeast ports? This week on Next from the New England News Collaborative, a look at the sea, ships, and shipping. And while the nation looks at southern border security, we'll look north. Please join us.
Stay with us for Next, coming up in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Legendary UCLA coach John Wooden was a mentor to basketball great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I learned from this man from day one until the day he passed. And since he has passed, I'm still learning from my experiences with him.
Coming up this week on Only a Game, stories of sports and mentorship, including Jackie Robinson and Xena, Warrior Princess. Join us.
Only a Game tomorrow morning at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what it means to eat a vegan or plant-based diet. Joining me today, Chris Bassett, who is a chef and baker at Slab. Avery Yale Camilla, a columnist with the Portland Press Herald, and Sarah Scovrin, registered dietitian and nutritionist. Join our conversation. Our number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Chris, before the break, we had a caller talking about the difference between vegan and plant-based, and you said you find some people who are vegans will not call themselves that.
Yeah, this seems to be a bad connotation to the word. Like a lot of vegans seem to be militant and want to scold other meat eaters about what they do, and that obviously creates a battle and hard feelings. So new vegans a lot of time don't want to be called a vegan because they feel like they'll be looked down upon by meat eaters, and so they say plant-based to kind of throw them off their trail.
Okay. And Avery, you said you have some stats with you. I mean, I think we instinctively know that interest in vegan eating is rising. But what can you tell us to back that up?
Well, there are no stats for Maine. Nobody's done a survey of, you know, how people are eating in Maine. But there was a recent market research firm that did a survey, and they report that veganism across the country has gone up 600% in the last 3 years, which is quite an increase. In 3 years. So, you know, there's something going on. That brings us to only 6% of the population reporting that they eat vegan. So you're still talking small numbers, but, you know, the increase is significant. Some of the things that I've seen and reported on here in Maine that kind of reflect this trend, Hannaford, you know, which has a lot of stores here in Maine, they're, when I've spoken with them, they say the only growth that's going on in their dairy case is all with non-dairy items. So vegan cheeses, vegan milks, vegan yogurts, all that sort of thing. I also was recently speaking with Amy Allward, who owns Love Cupcakes, and they do a lot of weddings and special events. And she had pulled some numbers for me. She said in 2014, only 30% of her clients, her brides and grooms, were requesting vegan items at their weddings. However, last year, that jumped all the way to 90% of customers who were having a wedding wanted something vegan there. Also, another stat that reflects Maine is Maine Restaurant Week. And they have a great tool where you can find the restaurants that offer vegan stuff. So in 2011, only 30% were offering vegan options. This year in 2018 during Maine Restaurant Week, which happens in March, that was up to 59% were offering a vegan dish.
Mm. And back to your original statistic about the 600% increase, and that probably doesn't even count all the people who are sort of what they say vegan part-time. You know, we think of Meghan Markle, who says she eats vegan during the week and then doesn't worry about it on the weekend. Or Tom Brady, who is predominantly vegan, he says, but during the winter adds some lean protein. So there seems to be a lot of that going on as well.
That's huge. That's really the driver of all this. You know, you've got 6% of people being vegan, but they don't, you know, that's not going to drive things. It's the people who are veganish, flexitarian, low meat eaters, whatever you want to call them. That can be up to, you know, 40% of the population, maybe even higher, depending on where you are. So these are people who, you know, may eat meat, may eat dairy, but they try not to eat it. So if they're going out and there's a vegan option, they're going to order a vegan meal. There's also a whole component of that group of people that have allergies. Kids who have a dairy allergy, person who has a dairy allergy, lactose intolerant, they are more comfortable ordering an item that says vegan on a menu than asking someone to take the cheese off because, you know, sometimes things don't come off the way they should. But if you order the vegan item, you know it's not going to have dairy in it and you're not going to have a reaction.
We'll go to Kathleen on Facebook. She says, we hear a lot about the harmful impacts of environmental estrogens on our developing children. Do we need to be mindful of phytoestrogen intake with children on plant-based diets? Do they pose the same risks? Sarah, is she talking about soy?
Yeah, almost certainly. The short answer is no. You don't have to be concerned about that. There have been studies on every kind of cancer, estrogen-based ones versus not, showing that not only does soy not have a harmful effect, in some cases it has a protective effect. And there have been studies on children, male and female, who've been eating soy products their entire lives, and zero effect in the adult, except in some of the women had menstrual cycles that lasted like a third of a day longer. So that was the only measurable effect in people who ate soy their whole lives versus not. Lot of research done on this. There's a lot of concerns. It sounds like it makes sense. There are phytoestrogens in soy, so the theory seems like it would follow. But when you look at the research, there's really not an issue at all.
We'll go to Patrick calling from Portland. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you guys for having this show. Very, very, very great stuff. I just wanted to chime in on a point earlier about Bennett and cheeses. I was formerly a cheese specialist for a food distribution company. And actually, the majority of commercially produced cheeses now use vegetal rennet. You can usually, it's on the ingredient statement listed as vegetal rennet. If it just says rennet, it probably isn't. But, you know, domestic cheeses, even some like really, you know, well-known foreign cheeses use vegetal rennet. It's just more widely available, easier to procure and, you know, use and all that stuff. So not to contradict anybody. But.
Well, yeah, no, Patrick, I'm really glad you called in. So your advice for someone who is trying to eat vegetarian but wants to eat cheese is to, you know, take your glasses with you to the grocery store and read the list of ingredients. And if it says vegetal rennet, that's what you're looking for.
Correct. And, you know, on that same topic, because my wife is vegan, I'm mostly vegan. My children are being raised plant-based. But, you know, I look at labels a lot. And even a lot of the dairy alternative cheeses you'll see will have casein in it, you know, milk protein and whey and things. So, you know, if you really are trying to adhere to a completely non-dairy diet, even the quote non-dairy cheeses will have some dairy in them.
All right, thanks so much for calling in. Mary on Facebook writes, beans and legumes are a big protein source in vegan diets. These items cause digestive issues for many people. How do we deal with that?
Well, there are lots of answers to that because there are several reasons why people might be having digestive issues with beans and lentils. The first one being if you are cooking your beans and lentils yourself, you really want to soak them first. That will leach out a lot of the compounds that cause digestive upset. They're water-soluble compounds, so they will come out in the water, and then you can drain and rinse that.
So the old-fashioned soaking them overnight before you cook them.
Yes, absolutely. If you are using canned beans, you want to drain and rinse those. That, again, because they're in that liquid, will remove a lot of those compounds. Some people, it is a what we call sort of a dose effect. They could have a small amount of beans at a time, but if they're eating, you know, a full cup of cooked beans at a time, that might cause an issue. So my first advice, if the rinsing does not work, would be to just decrease your serving size and see what happens. And then also, if you've just become vegan, often you find you're eating a lot more fiber than you used to, and that's something you want to increase slowly. Increase your fiber intake slowly, let your digestive system get used to it, and drink a lot of water.
All right. An email from Jessica. I have been eating a plant-based diet for health reasons for about a year and a half. I feel so much better on the diet. The only thing I have a hard time with is sometimes there seems to be an arrogance about people who choose this lifestyle, looking down on people who eat animal products. Chris, this is kind of what you're touching on before, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Avery, is this something you've dealt with in your column?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I've noticed is that when some people become newly vegan, particularly if they're vegan for animals, if it's an animal rights issue, they have seen all the horrifying videos and, you know, they just feel it so deeply in their heart and they can't understand why everyone else hasn't adopted the same lifestyle. So there is a militancy. I don't think it's as pervasive as people think. You know, there certainly are militant vegans out there and people who want everyone to go vegan right now, but maybe it's just a Maine thing. The people I've encountered in Maine are much more laid back and, you know, accepting of everybody. So, you know, I think that it has to do with people who are new vegans and, you know, just feel really strongly that there's, you know, something that we all should be doing. And
an email from Andrea that's related to our last Facebook post. I would like to recommend Tempeh, which is a soy product, but easier to digest than other bean products. You're nodding, Sarah. You agree mm-hmm. that's easier to digest?
It can be. It's a fermented soy product, so it has some natural probiotics in it that aid with digestion. It can be an acquired taste. It has an interesting texture, but it's good stuff.
All right. Well, we have lots of people giving shout outs to places you can have vegan offerings. So this is from Anne. New juice bar and vegan offerings in Rockland on Tilson Avenue near the Strand Theater, opening Saturday, May 26, also featuring a hot yoga studio. This will be your neighbor, Sarah.
Yes, and I read about that and I was very excited.
Okay, and then we also have, Brigida on Facebook. I want to give a shout out to Farm Fresh Cafe on Industrial Parkway in Brunswick. Their menu is plant-based and gluten-free. Wow.
Really good. Really good
stuff. You've eaten there? Yeah. Terrific. And then, here's one. Lori on Facebook. It's interesting to note that many beers and wines are not vegan, including Shipyard. Yeah. Do you source vegan wines and beers at Slab?
I'm not that familiar with why they are not vegan, actually.
Okay. You know, Sarah?
Yes. So the clarifying process in some beers, most beers actually, uses a product called isinglass. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, which is fish swim bladders. And so because there is a dead fish, that is not a vegan product. And beers that are vegan usually will label right on there.
All right. Well, I'm so sorry to everyone we were not able to get to in this hour. Popular topic. But I want to end with this one, a tweet from the Maine Animal Coalition, which is hosting VegFest. The VegFest, Saturday, June 2nd from 11 to 3 in Victoria Moran, is speaking at 1 p.m. on Saturday. And we will have links to that on our Facebook page and on our webpage. Thank you all for being here. Avery Yale Camilla is with the Portland Press Herald. She writes a vegan kitchen column. Sarah Scovrin, a registered dietitian and nutritionist with a focus on vegan diet. She's based in the Midcoast area. And Chris Bassett is a chef and baker at Slab Sicilian Street Food Restaurant in Portland and was the Maine Restaurant Association Chef of the Year for 2015. Roddy Nickpour ran the board. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produced the show. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling.